Hi, it's Kelly and Sara. Welcome to PageCast. We are recording at Kingsmead Book Fair. And today I am surrounded by some really wonderful South African authors. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to hand the mic over to them to do the hard yards of introducing themselves.
You don't know how to pronounce our names.
I do know, but maybe you do it. Okay, so Zukiswa Wana, please introduce yourself for the PageCast listeners.
Zukiswa Banner, author of five novels, four children's books.
Nice.
One of them published by Jacana Ball, distributed.
Nice.
And a travel memoir, a satirical nonfiction. That's me.
Wonderful.
Latest book, Love Mary Kill.
Yes. Available in all good bookstores.
Yeah.
Not this. My name is Kanyiso Chwagu. I'm a co-author of Twice the Glory, the makings of the greatest Springbok team in history. Oh. I am a sports journalist by day, a motor mechanic by qualification, and a failed engineer in another life. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty much me in a nutshell.
Yeah. My name is Sven Axelrad, and I'm an author of three novels. My latest one came out last week or so. It's called The Nicotine Gospel. Also, my day job, I'm an accountant at I make tampons for a living. But yeah, it's cool to be here on all this book stuff.
I am Dudu Ntlabathi Madunsela. I'm the author of the Dating Playbook. So I teach people about Njolo. And I'm a healthcare strategist by day. So yeah, if I'm not healing hearts, I'm healing the nation.
Oh, that's really lovely.
I wish I had something like that to say.
That sounds so clever.
Yeah. Well, each of you do heal in some way. I feel books do heal. So each of your books are linked by the theme of love. So I'm going to open up the conversation because I want to ask each of you the following so we can, again, do a round table. Do you think love is more about fate or choice, and why? So should we start with you, Dan?
It's a combination. So I always say there's three things that need to be in place for people to fall in love, and that's security, that's attraction, and that's inspiration, which is something for probably 80%. If you get it right with the person that you just have chemistry with, you probably could have a good relationship. And I think 20% is something that's written in the stars, something that, you know, no one can explain, and it's fate. And it's that this is the reason why you had two great guys, but you chose that particular.
I like that you've given 20% to like mystery, because I give them like 60% to mystery. just because I like this idea that it's undefinable. I think everything you said is 100% right. And your 20% is probably right too, but I'm just going to go with 60. Because in my book, fate is sort of chasing my characters around. But I think choice has a lot to do with it. Yeah.
It's choice. it's choice because...
It's the engineer talking now.
No. it's you. I mean, life is about choices, and you choose to love something, and then it's that love's choice, and fate would you choose to love you back. You could love writing, but can you write is the next one. Then writing loves you. So there's that. With the failed engineering part, for example, I'm pretty handy with a lot of things, and I love science, but Max didn't love me back. So but writing was always the first love, and sport was something that I loved as a choice that I loved, but it also didn't love me back. But it loved me back in other ways outside of the ability on the field.
But is it choice when it's with like people? That's also choice.
It is. Because I mean that is the essence of marriage. Because the essence of marriage, you move out of a family that has chosen to love you by virtue of being one of their own biologically, and you found a complete stranger to bring into your life. You choose to bring that person into your life.
But marriage and love.
Maybe it's just pregnant.
I'm saying
I could be married and not be in love. I could be in love and not married.
it all boils down to you make the decision, you choose.
No, but yeah, that is not love.
You're not necessarily.
The reason I'm asking,
just choosing to commit.
The reason I'm asking is maybe you love somebody else, but then you commit to somebody because you think they'll make a good mother, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you love
bank account.
Maybe you're joling with the other person on the side.
Oh, no. My wife's sitting behind you, so I can't. Tell us about the Mary Kill part of your title. Tell us about the kill part.
The biggest thing about the kill part is that I really, really, really want to have my hitman have a novel by himself, because I'm so fascinated by him.
Yeah.
And he's the least present character.
Okay.
But yeah. I guess that's to answer your question. What happens when you're married to somebody and they don't love you back? Do you kill them?
Do you?
Well, if you do love them, do you still kill them?
It depends if they're paying the bond or not.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I think that.
I mean, you can't be kidding somebody who's paying practical school fees at Kingsmead and then paying for the bond.
No, but what if you've got a what if you're Rosemary and you've got a good insurance?
That you're also
on them.
But I mean, you can't just, because people are emotional. It's like, oh, I don't want to do this, and then I'm in love, and then you run away with the mechanic. So they are school fees. Fees need to be paid. It's like, you know, black men are like, no, I can't leave my wife. She's bewitching me. I will never bewitch a man who pays for the bond. Never.
I mean, you said you've just trained your husband, you know? I'm sorry if he's listening, but you've just banged him up. You don't want to train up a new man now. You know what I mean? Start again.
I can train
them. No, but it's
just
possible.
The fact that the pain.
No, Sven, actually, it's very possible to watch it. Because, I mean, okay, all right. You guys are of a certain age. I'm younger, but like, I'm sure like in the 30s or 40s, people are going into second marriages if they're getting married again, you know? And that person is already trained by somebody else. So there's not much work to do, really.
Yeah, but you know?
Have you met the divorcees out there?
Yeah.
There's a reason why they divorced.
Yeah, there's a reason. But I mean, to be serious though, I mean, my wife is here, but like... But I think, like, if this didn't work out, I think I'm done with that, with love in general. Like, I'm just going to be, like...
Because you got the good deal the first time around, right?
Exactly, and you throw your heart into it as romantic.
Are you done with love or are you done with marriage?
Well...
No, so enough for me. If my husband drops down dead, I'm getting myself a rich white billionaire. I'm sick and tired of black men. They come with mother-in-laws and mothers and sisters and whatever. Yeah. So I want an orphaned white guy.
Okay. An orphaned white. Gotcha. Oh, I love that. That's a good disclaimer.
Okay. I think Rupert is an orphan.
No, I want like a beneficiary of some privilege or something.
And he even can book you up with a cottage in Stanley's.
But like, honestly, I did it the first time for love. I'm fine. I don't want to get married again and stuff like that. Somewhere. So I'm just like, even my selection criteria will be different. Like, you know, you must just look like, I don't know, you're from Bedford View and you've got a funny history.
So you're a drug dealer.
My life where I'm shantized and then I'm left alone, I'm more like, I moved to like Lisbon and I have this like scruffy looking dog with a bandana and I'm just that strange guy that walks around coffee shops and, you know, there's no like...
And the kids knocking on your door and running away type thing, like playing Tok Toki or...
Oh, right. No, I hadn't thought about that. Not that old.
Okay.
In this scenario, she does soon, you know. So it's
I think I want to call it. Like, if I
you're writing a book about me.
if I got widowed, I just like travel.
Yes.
Like just
there we go.
I just travel and just have fun
and just
with travel.
With
and it's like, you know, right? And then they're like, what's your name? And then I'm like, if I tell them my real name, they might Google me and then they say sound lie. I'll be like, my name is Duduzi or something. You know?
This is the time when TikTok went to the South African.
How are we talking about this?
I love this. So I do want to jump on after hearing this wonderful conversation, just having come to a close. But did anything from your real lives inspire your books and novels?
I mean,
books being nonfiction.
I had to think about not writing about the stories of the people in my lives.
Okay.
I had to be very, very deliberate because I've got very interesting people around me and they've got interesting dating stories.
Yeah.
But I did write about some of the things that I observed, like this one particular story where this boy brought a girl home and then his girlfriend the day before told us she's going to go and reclaim her TV. And then, you know, we're just minding our business at 6 a.m. in the morning and then we went to see this drama and then he came out and she came out running naked, the new girl, and then the mother with a knife behind her, and then the girlfriend and the boy with the knife behind the mother. So that was
that sounds fun.
It was absolutely fun.
Did you video it?
No, it was 1990 something.
Oh, okay. I was like if it's not on Twitter, did it happen?
There's a street name for that.
It's a clutch.
Yeah, no, it was proper drum. But I'm from Daveyton, so I come out of shop no can.
It's a way of life.
Yeah.
So any inspiration from real life?
Well, I mean, this is such a fun conversation. I don't want to be a downer. But like my new book has a lot of let's not be somber. My new book's based on like a religion made up about cigarettes. Kind of like using the zodiac. But depending on what kind of cigarette you smoke, I can tell what you're like as a person. And that's obviously not real at all. Although I did teach myself to smoke so that I would understand cigarettes and stuff for the book.
Have you quit?
Yeah, I quit today.
Okay.
Yeah, I've quit today.
Just check after we.
Yeah. Yes, I've seen you on socials again, and you know. But yeah, there's a lot of this new one's a lot about my brother and me growing up as kids. It's not the truth, but it's based on what it was like for us. We're in an abusive home, and that. So it's a lot of fun, but there's also a serious like tone there of what happens to you in those kind of homes.
Well, I'm a failed rugby player, failed cricketer, failed in a lot of sports. The only thing I really did of significance at school in sport wise was I was a top scorer in the internal league, and that got me a burger and coke each week until the summer season ended.
Nice.
So I've always had a love of sport, to a point where my teammates often said I was an analyst in waiting. One used to call me now sport. They're like, stop being a now sport, and they just play the game. So effectively, I've got for the past 15 years, I've been able to do what I love. And one of the things that I never thought I'd be able to do was to go to a World Cup and actually experience a World Cup final. And
no, yeah, just showing more.
No. There was a lot of drama in between that 15 years that I was like, if I got through a day, I was very happy. If I got through a week, got through a month. That being said, I experienced something I never planned for. I had a goal sheet when I was 18. I had a lot of goals that I've met. Going to a World Cup wasn't one of them. So that was just the passport cherry on top. And this probably is because a labor of love was obviously became pertinent that a book needs to be written. And it just appealed to my love of sport, my love of history, my love of recalling insignificant details. Because if you tell me what I needed to do, is it not forget? But tell me about something that happened 20 years ago, I'll be able to remember like that yesterday.
Yeah.
So if this book, first one that I co-authored as one of the Lloyd Bombard, is effectively a labor of love.
Yeah, I think all of it.
Yeah, it's a fun book, but there are quite a few things that are inspired by actual life. So, for instance, I borrowed from our childhood, my childhood when we were kids, and Sisonko will probably tell you the same story. Or she might be familiar with it. Lindy certainly is familiar with this story. Quite a few kids who grew up in Zambia in exile are familiar with this story. There was an uncle who used to, our parents would tell us not to open the door if he came and they were not there because he was rapey.
Yeah.
And I think, so as I was writing, that was one of those things that I kept thinking, that how children are supposed to be responsible for not being sexually abused, in a lot of communities, as if they'd reported their comrade, people wouldn't have been safer, So that was one of the more real things that, that I borrowed. And then the other thing was, there's a tavern in Tembisa, and there's this guy who comes there all the time. My friend owns the tavern, and I kind of borrowed it to as a setting. And there's this old guy who comes, and he's always like cleanly dressed, nice, wears expensive stuff. He's a short guy, wears fedora, those two-tone shoes and stuff and everything, like old school, And And he's always like making it rain for everybody, but what? Nobody knows what he does.
Mm.
So my hitman is based on that.
Okay, I love it.
Yeah. Oh, okay, okay.
That's cool.
Yeah.
The fact that you're writing about hitmen.
Ash, I know, you know, like, it was actually very fun. It was so fun to research. Do you know how cheap it is to take a life?
How much?
Yeah, about 10,000.
Which are, actually, the more expensive they are, the more likely you are for them not to snitch. So,
okay.
Stick around me if you guys need such information.
Okay.
Now we know.
Since we're talking about being widowed and all that stuff.
Look, it's the lay of the gunslinging world. The higher the price, the higher the silence.
Really?
Ooh. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's something to take away.
Mm. Nice. I've always wondered, like, where do you start when you were looking for a hitman?
The cheap ones will snitch, like, very fast. They'll be like at a tavern. They'll be like, yeah.
I did this, I did that. Okay. So experience is...
Yeah. In fact, this was the stupidity of Rosalind Love, you know. Mm. If she'd hired somebody who was really expensive, we'd still not have found out.
Mm.
You know, now we can't even insure our relatives.
Yeah, she did take in a bit farther. She took it really far.
A little bit. She couldn't be like one tunyana.
No.
Greed. You know, one of the things with this topic is very important. You know, like the seven deadly sins, not something I'd actually, reading through the Bible, it's not something that actually occurred to me. But then I had to watch Shazam. And I take in my kids to the and then there's right towards the end when he's got when Billy Batson's got the antagonist, his name just escapes me, pinned towards the wall. He tries to get out the one remaining sin because it was a sin that powered him. And greed was the last sin that came up. Only then it's like the lengths people go to.
Yeah.
Because of greed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But there's also a greediness in love in some way.
Look, it's natural. It's natural. It's natural to be envious. It's natural to be greedy. But I think, I mean, without greed, without any with ambition.
What do you mean? Like greediness in terms of you want more than you should be getting out of the relationship?
I mean, yeah, I think so. Or if the other person decides that this isn't working for them and they leave... And you feel like they should be mine still. So
like a position.
There is like that sort of like, this is mine.
I think there's lack of greed in love. From a lot of women in KZN.
What do you
in
mean?
In Istanbul.
Oh.
That's
the next novel we'll talk about.
But I think the key part is that the psyche of having, and I've stayed in case, I mean, like the psyche of the Zulu woman, like, you know, people will look at Sindhu's wives and they will draw parallels, conversations. It's probably one of those things where you actually need to stay and not in urban case, spend time in rural and look at how the growth of the family is a bigger conversation around the needs of an individual.
Mm. Do you know what's interesting though? In Mombasa, there is a woman who has three husbands, you know?
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. She's got three husbands.
Good for her.
No, good for her.
No, I mean, like, just never mind training. Like, every night, it's hello, baby.
Maybe she's got a really... She says she has a really high sex drive.
Yeah.
But also, like, you know, I think each of the men, like, meets certain needs. There's a money guy.
Oh, okay. But why would I, as a money guy, be with a woman who's I'm sharing with other men?
No, maybe you just want, like, you want a piece of her in the same way that Seleku's women want a piece of his.
Both your theories, I mean, looking at what drives people to be with certain people, I think if we looked at every single one, there is a certain inadequacy, a certain scarcity mentality that actually is driving that. Because think about it, as a rich guy, why would you be with a woman who's got other women, especially as an African man where you've been conditioned that, you know, you are the hero and then, you know, a woman is a reflection of your stature in society.
Well, yeah, no, but maybe his post-conditioning.
But what's informing the choice? Yeah. That choice comes, for me, it comes from a sense of this must be an insecurity or an inadequacy that's driving that. And if you look at his timbre, right?
Yeah.
I have a theory about his timbre. And I think that, so I think previously his timbre, we wouldn't be surprised if it was more advocated by women than men, because women couldn't inherit land.
Yeah.
They couldn't inherit anything. And for the continuity, if let's say they're widowed for their kids and so forth, it made sense economically. And
that was a premise, actually. It was always a premise back in the day.
Right. Yeah. It made sense economically.
And you remember that, you often married into the same family in the event of a passing to continue that particular bloodline. Yeah.
And I just think now, if you look at it, I think it comes from the fact that a lot of women, even in urban areas, enter his temple because of the fact of scarcity of resources. Because ultimately, I have this theory that they look and they say, I have only have the capability probably in a lifetime to make only 15,000 a month tops. But there's this guy who's going to top me up with an extra 30,000 and is topping three of us with an extra 30,000. Because just like the Iwanet culture and the Blesser culture, if our economy was growing at double digits, would we see some of the things that we see?
Right? No, but how do you explain Makumalo, for instance? Because
she's conditioned like that. Because she's old and she's conditioned like that. But think about it, especially as South Africans. We are far more westernized than the other African countries. We actually do not realize how the black people here are so westernized. And if you come from a Western school system and a Western thinking and so forth, and you have a whole thing around social media, unless you've grown up in a family, and hence why Sedig is experiencing what he's experiencing, because they're like, how can you take a sixth wife? Well, he's got five. Like, why are you even putting a limit to it? There's infighting amongst them, and you can see that this is not something they signed in for, because psychologically some of them understood it and they were ready for it. Yeah, it was a matter of a survival tactic. I swear to you, if I had the money to run a social experiment and I had a billion, I would go to most of the women who've got his temp and I'd say, if I gave you guys like 2 million each, how many of you would stay with your husbands?
And if you can get the money, I'll pretend that I'm in his temp.
Look, it's C word. But look, again, it's the C word leading to the C word. Choices and the subsequent consequences thereof. Because they would have been in that position to understand.
Do you think women think about consequences thereof afterwards? Why do you think we turn psycho when they dump us?
No, they have to. No, you have to. But because, I mean,
do you think you honestly walk around the world thinking that women think about the consequences of their
I grew up in a household full of women. Yes.
You think they do? When they see you.
Yeah.
And when you're married with two kids.
Yeah.
And then you're promising them the world.
They do.
Do you think when they say yes to you, they think about the consequences of the actions?
No.
I love your mind.
The thing is, look, at the end of the day, if you're not thinking of, it's like a man going out to cheat. Trust me, 95% of the brothers who go out and cheat are very much aware of the consequences of that choice. But it's choosing to live with the consequence.
Okay.
Yes. So if they are shellacked, women know what the consequences are. But they choose to either live in the reality of the consequence or choose to live in the ignorance of the consequence.
So you're saying the Father's Day saga when people bitter on Facebook is because of they thought about the consequences and now that the reality
because the unfortunate part, you cannot manage another person's consequences. You can only manage your own.
Yeah.
Which is why when I'll use myself as an example, my dad was always present but not present. So I never thought that I'd actually make a good father. People will say I'm a good father. I know that I'll switch off while my kids are here. I'll literally switch off. And things will happen. Then I'll snap in the guys will watch this happen.
Mm-hmm.
But again, choices will lead to consequences. And I think sometimes the consequence of, let's say, that being in a relationship, then you see that, hey, this is changing. You ask yourself, with this particular consequence, can I now make another choice? So that it's actually a never ending cycle, because
I love what you're saying, but
yeah,
I think the flaw for me here is that we assume that people can exercise choices.
No, they have to. I mean,
You can't.
I mean, the only
everyone can exercise their choice. The only choice we don't have the word privilege.
Mm-hmm. The only choice we don't have is waking up in the morning, because we can never know whether we'll be blessed with another day. But stepping from that forward, you make your choice. Well, I'm going to have this, or I'm going to have
that. Do you think a woman who is financially trapped in a relationship, who's uneducated, comes from a family whereby there is, do you think sometimes when she is agreeing to certain things,
yes,
she has the liberty to make different choices?
And unfortunately, again, another circumstances that are born by, the choices are guided by the circumstances that she's born in.
Mm.
And that will then inform the consequences of her choices.
The three C's.
Yes.
Choice, circumstance. And then circumstance, choice.
And then it builds a what? A cycle.
Yeah. There we go.
I'm more empathetic towards people, even though...
But empathy is important.
I understand some people as life is much more tougher.
No, empathy is very important. That is true.
Alrighty. So thank you guys for joining us. No, we've got to wrap up. But it was so lovely having all of you here, and so lovely to get to meet you all. And yeah, so... You can catch all their books at bookstores, good and bad. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much.